Hey guys, welcome back to Tribe of Unicorns. I'm your host, Kendra Beavis, and I am sitting here with Nora Rahimian. How are you today?
I'm good. You said my name right.
Yay! There was a little bit of practice, I'm not going to lie. Nora is the co-founder of Culture Fix, which I can't wait to get into, and an anti-capitalist business coach, which I totally love. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited for our conversation.
Yes. Yes. We are going to talk all about failure, but first I want to hear all about you. Can you give us a little insight into where you are currently in the world?
Yeah. So currently I am in Los Angeles, which is occupied land that belongs to the Chumash and Tonga people. And how I got here is a story of chance and luck and geopolitical factors completely outside of my control. I was born in Iran during the US instigated Iran-Iraq war. My family left Iran as refugees. And so I lived on three continents before I was three, which I share because it really shaped my ideas of community and connection. And if you ask me really, really like what I do in the world, I connect with people, I love people, but that was a survival skill I learned as a refugee and as someone in diaspora and as someone who's always had to navigate different worlds and not quite fitting. You know, I'm a queer Middle Eastern woman of color, you know, with all these other like identity factors. And so always kind of being on the margins or being marginalized, I learned and had to develop these survival skills that turns out work as a coach, work in the arts, work that I, you know, they have other purposes. So my background is in community organizing. I, for years, did gang intervention and prison abolition work until I, long story short, ended up in Liberia and got peer pressured into managing a hip hop artist. So I was the first music manager in Liberia. And at the time I was like, y'all, I don't know anything about music. I don't know anything around business, let alone music business. Like, I'm trying to overthrow capitalism. What do you mean you want me to manage this artist? And they peer pressured me. And I was like, well, all right, I have these skills as an organizer. How much different is that than management? And so that's how I got into the music space. And that was over a decade ago. And really, I think the thing that my work is really about is looking at how we can use art and culture and community to challenge systems of injustice.
Yeah.
And so whether I'm like doing abolition work or I'm working with artists or now in my work as a consultant, really helping people think about how they can build the lives they want to live so that they can have time for community and social justice work and all those other things. That's always kind of been the, what do they call it? Like the through underlying, line? Yes, like the underlying thing. And so that's kind of what's brought me to this time and place. And so a lot of kind of, like I said, trial and error and risk and chance, but also a lot of failure, which I know we're going to talk about today.
Yes, yes. So I mean, that's fascinating. And what a story. It's so amazing to me what people have been through and the skill set that they develop and how then you can kind of craft that or use it to your best ability to really kind of fulfill your life's purpose.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things. There's, you know, we talk a lot about code switching. We talk a lot about, you know, there's like these survival skills that a lot of us who don't come from systemically privileged groups, there's a lot of skills that we've developed. Yet at the same time, these same systems are telling us we're not good enough, we're to this, not that, you know, like there's all this kind of cultural gaslighting that happens. Mm-hmm. And so that's where things like imposter syndrome come from. And that's where things like just general fears and anxiety comes from. So we have the skills because it's how we survive in the world. And at the same time, we're receiving these cultural messages that these skills that we have are not good enough. And so it's a way of, I think, extracting more labor from us, more work from us.
Sure.
But those are our skills. And partly because they're not edified through like institutional systems, right? I don't have a degree or I, you know, you might not have like that piece of paper, but it's something you learn culturally and experientially. Those same systems of power don't recognize that. So no. You can't put on a resume, right? You can't put code switching on a resume.
No, and totally by design.
Yes. Exactly. And totally by design. And I, you know, I always come back to like imposter syndrome is the great example because where does imposter syndrome come from? Why can't I speak? where does imposter syndrome come from? It comes from all these messages of white supremacy and patriarchy and heteronormativity that tell us that like who and how we are is not enough in whatever sector of the world we're looking at. And so what do we do? And they've individualized this, right? So we think that imposter syndrome is like a problem with me,
right?
Rather than recognizing that this is actually culturally and systemically curated. Because when you think you're not good enough, you don't ask for the raise. Mm-hmm. You don't, you know, ask for the promotion. You don't set your limits. You don't say no to your boss. You don't do these things. And yet at the same time, you work extra hard to prove that you do belong there, that you are as good as everyone. And so it's this like very intentional psychological game that's being played with us to get more from us while we're simultaneously asking for less. And that's so systemic and it's so cultivated in us. And so a lot of the work that I do is helping people kind of unpack that, mm-hmm. right? And I think, again, this, I know we're going to talk about failure in a second, but it all ties in.
It does.
Because if you're trying to prove that you're not an imposter, you're not going to give yourself permission to take risks and you're not going to give yourself permission to make mistakes because there's this pressure to be perfect, which is an impossible standard. And so we start to see how all of these things that seemingly have nothing to do with each other are so deeply intertwined and interconnected. And we think they're personal, but they actually come from these systems that we have no control over in a real way. And so starting to kind of unpack and unlearn some of these things is then where I think a lot of the shifts can change into risk and play and imagination and all that other kind of stuff.
Well, I think the idea that we are not allowed to fail, that we cannot show our failures and that they should be like tucked away under the rug and only show your perfection is a story that I think has been really nailed home. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean? Between social media, but then also in corporate too. I mean, nobody embraces failure. Nobody, you know, most companies would never tell their employees, you know, I want you to fail 20 times before you come to me with a solution.
Right. Which I think is partially true. Mm. Right. And like there, I think failure, different people have different degrees of being allowed to fail.
Scientists are encouraged to fail, right? You're doing experiment after experiment after experiment until you get, you know, the right solution.
Arguably. So it's on different levels, right? On one level, in a capitalistic construct, we don't do things for the sake of like curiosity. So even scientists are not really doing research for the sake of learning new things. They're doing research so they can have a product that can be patented and trademarked and sold. So it's not even the same degree of like, let's be curious for the sake of curiosity. It's let's do a test that gives us a hypothesis that we can skew the answers, right? Because there's still biases in science, but we can skew the responses so that we can have this thing to do what we want. Not to say that science is not real. Medicine is real. Science is real. Like,
but in a pure form.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think that's part of it, right? Under capitalism, our businesses don't allow for failure because we don't see the failure as linearly productive. In the grand system, it absolutely is. But linearly, we're like, no, we got to make this cash now. And so failure takes money out of our pockets.
Yeah.
The second level of that is depending on your social identity and social location, we're not all allowed to fail equally. Mm-hmm. So white men fail all the time and they fail up, right? And like Amazon is a great example. Amazon didn't make money for like the first however many years of their business. But because Jeff Bezos is a white dude with like social capital, people were like, no, but here's, oh, you're not making money. It's okay. Here's more money. Versus if I, as a woman of color, failed, they'd be like, well, women aren't really good at this. And so not only am I not going to give you as a woman more money, I'm not going to give the next five women who come after you money because I'm going to stereotype you and all women are the same. Right. And so that's the piece where, for many of us, if we don't fit into those hegemonic kind of traditional systems of power, because we have to prove that we belong in these places that weren't designed for us in the first place, our failure is not a reflection on, oh, this just didn't work out. Our failure become our quote unquote, you can't see me because this is a podcast, but like, yeah, quoting, right? Because it's not even really failure. The perception of failure is becomes a reflection of who I am as a person, but then also everybody I represent. See, right. We knew we couldn't let those, mm-hmm. you know, immigrants do that thing because they're all bad. And so there's a heavy pressure where some of us don't feel like we can fail because that failure means something so different than if it was someone else. And let's add the third level to it, where there's a real thing about, again, using like billionaires as an example. If a billionaire fails, there's all kinds of safety nets, both physical and social and political and systemic, to capture them, right? To catch mm-hmm. them. Versus if I fail, I only get one shot. It's like that Eminem song, right? You get one shot. And so there's a real, the level of risk is not the same for all of us.
Right.
And so
right.
I think that's also, you know, like not all failure carries the same risk, comes with the same opportunity. And so I think that's a real piece of it that we do, you know, like I'm going to tell you, I'll take the risk, do the thing. But I also want to acknowledge that it's not the same for everybody.
Sure. Yeah. When I was leaving my ex-husband, you know, it was a huge risk, and I didn't have a safety net, but I knew that whether I was going to fail or succeed, even the failures were teaching me different things that I could do better as I continued. But I guess my at my core, I knew I would never let myself fall completely. You know, I was just going to keep trying and doing and never giving up until my kids were safe and we were taken care of. And, you know, we had money to buy diapers and all of that. But it's a really interesting point that there's different heaviness to the type of risks you can take depending on the situation you're in and whether it be society or culturally or geographically.
Right. Right. Financially, economic, you know, like all the things. And I think there's something also that you just made me think of is we all also have different trauma around failure or the perception of failure.
Yeah.
And so sometimes as adults, the fear of failure has nothing to do with what I know as a full grown person,
right?
But take me back to what my parents might've said if I failed as a child, or the pressure of perfectionism, or, you know, I don't know, like being in a household that was unstable. So perfection was a way of maintaining control, and failure feels like a lack of, right? There's like all this. And I don't think we talk about this piece enough around the like mental psychosocial aspect. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, I think we all reach a level of like the risk of failing is better than whatever situation I'm in now.
Right, right.
And so you're like, dang, like, I don't know if I can cuss on this.
I'm all in. Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, you're like, fuck it. Right. Yep. You're like, fuck it. Yeah. I'd rather fail at something than be in this thing that I know that isn't, because we also often confuse something that's like familiar with something that's like good or comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so stick to the familiar. And if you're going to open yourself up to failure, you're really opening yourself up to like all these unknowns, and that's frightening.
Sure.
And so at some point, there's also this point of reaching like, dang, it can't be worse than what I know. So like, let's jump all in. And so I think we often talk about failure as this like binary that's so simple and so cut and dry, and it's not. And there's all these other like nuances that come into it that then accumulate in this point where we're like, all right, am I going to take this risk or am I not? With all this like backstory that we don't always talk about, especially in a world, as you mentioned, where like social media has us performing perfection and we're all in like, we think we're in competition with each other and all this other stuff. It's super complex.
Yeah, it is. There's so many layers to it, but I like the idea of having the conversation about all of these assets or aspects of it, but also, I hate the negative connotation of the word failure, because I just don't believe that it is a negative situation when you're trying something new and you're taking that risk. I mean, that should be applauded and you know, kind of an incredible moment in most people's lives when they finally are like, I am going to move forward. I am going to do this regardless of the risk. This is worth it.
Yeah. Well, and even like, even as we're talking about it, right, the framing of trying something new and walking away with it, mm-hmm. away from it versus walking away from something you spent 25 years on or a project that you and right. Like we're like, oh, but you spent so much time and money and energy and still it's okay 25 years later to be all right. And I think part of this comes, and I think again, like there's a lot of stigma around women who change their mind.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And so like this, there's a lot of cultural messages that we receive around like winners don't quit and don't, you know, like, right, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so then here we are as women or as like non-cis male people, and we change our mind and everyone perceives that and reads that a certain way.
Yeah.
But to give ourselves permission to be like this, what it comes down to is saying this no longer works for me.
Yeah.
And then deciding for yourself, okay, well now what? And again, like in a system that's patriarchal and white supremacist and capitalistic, we're taught to move away from who we are. We're taught to not listen to our core selves. This might sound a little woo-woo, but like it really what it is. We're like taught to dehumanize ourselves and dehumanize each other. And so when you're working on a project, whether it's brand new or something you've been in for 25 years, rather than checking in with yourself about, do I want to spend my time doing this? Does this nourish me? Does this make my community a better place? We go to these narratives of, well, I put so much in, I've invested so much in this and I got to get my returns and only losers quit and don't be a sucker and like all this stuff, which isn't your own narrative, right?
No.
These are external narratives that you're like hearing in your head. And so there's something really kind of radical about taking a step back from these cultural narratives and asking yourself, what do I need? What do I want? And is this still worth my time?
Yeah.
And so that's the reframe around failure, is if you decide no, then in my perspective, that's a win.
Huge
right?
Win.
The failure is in continuing to do something that has no value for you, whether that's social or economical or physical or whatever. That right. And so it's almost like we're told that walking away from something that doesn't serve you is a failure, but actually it's a win because you're curating and creating the life that best serves you. And this is true with business. I think about this in terms of divorce all the time. Like somehow we think staying in a marriage is like the best thing ever, but why would you want to stay in a shitty marriage? Walking away?
Well, because culturally that's what I was told I should do. And like internally to then own a new title of divorced mom of one and one on the way, and my own stigma of how I would have judged that person in the past really all came like rearing its ugly head into that decision process. But yeah, I think anytime you're making a decision and there's a should attached to it, it's probably not your thought.
Right. And then I think about how much of it is also, we think so linearly about success and failure. So I've worked on projects where I've helped start really successful companies, big things, and then decided at some point through the process that this wasn't right for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked away. And by any outside standard, someone would look at that and be like, dang, Nora, you are stupid. Like, how could you? Why could you? But in the long run, it opened up my emotional capacity to take on the next project that was a better project for me. It allowed me to conserve the relationship so that this person that I walked away from led to another more appropriate project for us down the line, for example.
Yeah.
So it's also something about like redefining what timelines look like.
Yeah.
That it's not always one-to-one. And then also redefining what success looks like, because it's not always just the outcome, right? And again, this is like capitalism tells us, did you make money? Did you get, you know, versus do I still like the relationships I have?
Right.
Do I like the process of how this happened? And then outcomes as part of that. And so if you can think about success, you can think about success as multi-planed, multifaceted, then failure doesn't become an all or nothing. Failure can be, you know, I did okay here, could have done better here, really like how that turned out.
Yeah.
And in that process, you're giving yourself permission to play, to experiment, to explore, to learn. And then you can take that information and reinvest it so that we start to treat information as a resource and a commodity, as capital, right? That we might not have looked at it that way before because we're only looking as like, as cash, as capital. So it's a whole like restructuring, redefinition, where you get to decide for yourself as the entrepreneur or the whatever, you get to decide for yourself what matters.
Yeah. I think when I left my job in the city, I think people probably thought I was crazy. I know people thought I was crazy because it was like the job I had talked about since I was like 6 years old. And I was going to be working in Manhattan in Midtown and at this cool design studio. And when I walked out, I knew I was going to be fine. And I knew I was walking into a better life. I didn't know what that looked like, but I trusted in myself enough to do, but man, the people around me were like, not comfortable with it at all.
Well, so I think there's also, right? Like, let's talk about how complex it is.
Yeah.
Because when you give yourself permission to do something like that, there's also something that it brings up, I think, in other people that they're like, what? How could Kendra do that? Why can't, am I not, right? And so there's something that it can trigger a response in people where their critique or their whatever has nothing to do with
you. It's them that didn't take a risk. And now I'm taking a risk they probably wish they would have taken at some point in their lives with a similar situation.
Right. Exactly. So when they see you doing the thing, it brings up for them their own dissatisfaction or their own fears or their own anxieties. Again, because, you know, once you, there's a comfort in believing the narratives that we're told about how life is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, all right, if I follow this blueprint and I just go along with it, cool, easy breezy.
Yeah.
When you see someone who starts to break out of that mold, that person is not only breaking the mold for themselves, they're now breaking the illusion for everybody, right? You're like, look, here's the wrinkle in time. Here's the rip in the matrix. Here's like, I just watched Truman Show recently. It's like, here's the lamp that falls from the sky and like breaks the whole facade, right? And so there's also something about how this kind of work that is actively challenging narratives.
That's very true.
A little bit radical.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying, look, another way is possible. And now people are faced with the ability to choose for themselves rather than blindly following the way it's always been. Because saying, well, the way it's always been takes our power out of it.
Yeah.
And so when you leave that cushy job or I walk away from that big company, what we introduce to people is actually doesn't have to be the way it's always been. And now it's on you to exercise that agency, which is scary. And it's scary if you've never had the chance to exercise that agency.
Right, right. I wonder, do you feel like that's a global idea? Like follow this path and this is the framework, do not stray and you'll be good. And we want to keep everybody in this like kind of straight and narrow box.
I don't know. I think it's in some ways, yes. Like under the system of like governed capitalism.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's like a Western Euro US thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in other cultures, it shows up maybe in different ways, but like the same idea, right? Like as a Persian immigrant, I should have been a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer and married, but that's a whole other thing. And the fact that I'm not by like cultural standards is, oh, I failed. But it's not about I failed because I didn't do these things. It's about as immigrants, our culture, our community wants to create a space of safety. And safety is defined as having a partner and having one of these jobs that are secure and will financially, right? So on the surface, you can look at it and be like, that's because these things are very narrowly defined. But if we broaden it to understand what it means to be in diaspora and to immigrate, then all these other, right? Then it goes back to what you were talking about failure not having the same weight for, or not everyone, what was I saying? That everyone doesn't have the same freedom or flexibility to fail. So I don't know. I think globally it's tricky, but I do think that this is a result of like white supremacist, patriarchal, capitalistic structures that are kind of existent in many places, whether or not it's on US soil or not.
Yeah. It's interesting. So what do you say to the entrepreneur who is, let's say, leaving it, or the future entrepreneur who seeing the realities of limiting beliefs not really be true? And they're like, oh, wow, I can maybe do something different. I can choose to live my life in a different way that serves me better. What is your advice to somebody jumping into this new world in relation to failure?
I think one, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And so give yourself permission to scale into, if you're like, all right, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Awesome. You can still hold on, you know, maybe your 40 hour a week job becomes 30 hours a week and you start doing 5 hours here and then 20 hours. And, you know, like give yourself space to transition and create to scale it the way that makes sense for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one. Can I give two more?
You can give as many as you want.
Like I have a lot. So one is it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Two is that it doesn't have to be perfect from the start. And I think this is probably one of the biggest things that holds people back is here you are, you want to do something that you've never done before. And you want to be like A+ amazing at it from the jump. Who does that? No right? One. Like you gotta learn to, even though that's what you see, so you think everyone else is perfect, what you don't see is all the times they bloopered and fell and stumbled. And so if you wait to be perfect, someone else is already going to do what you want to do, and they're going to do it imperfectly, but they're doing it. And so giving yourself permission to start even before you have it all together and trust that your audience or your customer, your client is going to relate to your imperfection, because perfection is not human. Like right. It's not relatable. We roll our eyes at perfection, but mistakes and authenticity and that process, that's relatable. And so your consistency is what's going to connect with your audience. So allow yourself to like transition and scale. Two is allow yourself to just be consistent. Even if it's sloppy, you'll grow into perfection. And then three is, and maybe I think for me, this was the hardest one, is to stop saying no to yourself before other people have had a chance to say no to you. So often we don't even do the thing because we're like, oh, nah, stupid, blah, blah, blah. But then you don't even know. You've just negated yourself. And so put it out there and let other people tell you how they feel, because other people will always surprise you. So those to me are like the three. Okay, and then one more, four. Four is allow yourself to redefine success and failure. Like really, if you're sitting, you know, if you're building your business plan or you're doing your marketing or whatever it might be, create a space where you ask yourself the question of what is success for me really? And what is failure for me really? And just creating space to even investigate, right? If you can approach with curiosity, then you might be surprised by the answers that come up. And then you can start to change your relationship with both success and failure.
Right, right. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I mean, if you're not trying different things and shifting and pivoting, because how would we ever know if we even enjoy doing the thing that we want to do, or even the way we think we want to do it until we start?
Right. Right. And then I think about this a lot in the terms of like, we ask kids at 5, 6 years
old. I know.
What do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. I've only been exposed to 4 things in my life. Right.
I know.
That pressure. And I think we expect people to carry that out, right? Or at 16, we're like, where do you want to go to college? What do you want to do for the rest of your life? And it's so much pressure, but then we carry that into adulthood.
Yeah.
And if you give yourself permission to try things you're not good at and curious. Like, I really think that curiosity is the key. And so if you take failure, like I said, as another opportunity to just gather more information, then you might, because you don't know what you don't know, and you won't know that you don't know it until you realize that you needed to know it, right? This is a whole bunch of negatives, y'all, but like that really is part of what it is. And so it's giving yourself, it's really about giving yourself permission to see what happens rather than expecting the outcome that you think is what you want.
Yeah. My son is 15 and we're grappling with that right now. Like, okay, college, and he's thinking about becoming a music teacher. And you know, when I was growing up, it was like, well, you'll go to school within the tri-state area because God forbid you be more out than 4 hours drive. And, you know, it was just very in this little bubble. And now with him, I'm like, don't pigeonhole yourself to one. Like, how could you possibly ever know where you want to live when you've only ever been in this tiny little, like there's an entire world out there. Maybe he'd be better suited to live somewhere in the UK, or who knows? There, it's a huge world. So I have such an issue with, what do you want to be with when you grow up, and the idea of like being so settled and that being the goal. Cause
yeah,
it's all about the exploration for me. I think that's the funnest part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think about how many people I know who move to place, and you know, I live in Los Angeles, right? There's something about like, and I think New York is the same. If you move to New York and then you move back to wherever you came from, like, oh, you couldn't make it in the big city. What is that? That is such a nonsense narrative, right?
Yeah.
Versus like going, trying, deciding it wasn't right for you, but the value is in the fact that you went and you tried it.
Yeah. Right.
And for me, you know, I've lived like all over the world, and it's always been, well, if I don't like it, I can always go back to LA.
Or somewhere else.
Or somewhere else. I can try the next thing, which of course like comes with all the privilege of having a visa and a passport.
Right, right. And the mobility.
But that mentality of, this doesn't have to be a forever decision.
Right. Yeah.
Is part of what I think allows that flexibility. And that's the thing about failure. You don't have to do something with the expectation that this is your forever decision. This is your, let me see how I feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Which is so valuable. How you feel is just as valuable as like the outcome.
Totally. Can you talk about culture picks a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Like my face just lit up. So I'm like, I wish y'all could see me. I'm so animated. Culture Fix is a global network of artists and activists and entrepreneurs who use their platforms for social impact. And the idea is that we have within our networks everything we need to succeed, and that we are not in competition with each other, but actually become stronger by collaboration, and that our struggles, no matter where we are in the world, are interconnected. And so as we use art and culture to really create the kinds of shifts that we're trying to change in the world, we're also imagining what the alternative can look like. How do, you know, it's easy to talk about what are all the things we're going to tear down, and there is a lot, but also then what kind of world do we want to imagine? And so we do things like educational workshops, and we do a lot of matchmaking between creatives for collaborative projects and resource sharing. We have a Discord. So it really is a really supportive community of creatives from all over the world who are doing really amazing stuff. And I think part of it is also so much of what we do, we're told is radical. Mm-hmm. Oh, this can never happen. Oh, this is 10 years down the line. And so a big part of our work is showing that no, in fact, these things are viable, feasible, and happening now. And so the change that we imagine is not as radical as people try to gaslight us into thinking that it is.
I love that. Very cool. So where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter, all the socials at Nora Rahimian, NoraRahimian. You can also shoot me an email, NoraRahimian@gmail.com. My DMs are always open. I'm pretty Googleable.
Okay, cool.
All my links, hit the link tree. But I try, you know, because I do believe in people, like, we are nothing if we don't connect to each other. And so I'm really open to connecting. And so if people hear this and something resonates, like, let's talk, like, let's talk, let's build, let's connect. I'm here for all of that, because that's how we're nothing without our communities. And this is how community happens.
And nowadays, that's one of my favorite things about growing up in this like digital community. It's just so much fun to just see someone that you think is cool and reach out and have a conversation like we just did.
Yes, like we just did. Yeah. And to be like, ooh, you're cool. And then slide in the DMs respectfully.
Yes.
But I think the beauty of the space that we're in is we can find people across time and place and location where we share values and beliefs and like, you're cool and I want to know you because of these things that I see that resonate with me. I think that's so powerful. And I don't think we use that social piece. This could be a whole other podcast episode, but like that social piece of social media is so critical.
Oh, it's the best. I made such a good friend. She DM'd me about the podcast named Unicorns, and she has a business unicorn VAs. And we probably talked for 3 hours on chat and have been friends for a good year and a half now. And it's so funny.
I love that. The person that I started Culture Fix with, we initially met on Twitter during a Twitter chat, like almost a decade ago.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. It was like 4 tweets and 2 DMs. And we were like, oh, we should start this whole company together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I love, like I said, having these conversations with people from all over the place who have, I think there's such value. We don't all have the same minds and we don't all think alike. And, I think telling people stories and sharing ideas is an absolute must. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.